You're listening to the School Success Formula with me, Lucy Parsons. This is episode number 55. Hello and welcome to today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening. Today we have a fantastic interview with Catherine Pearson, who is going to be talking about how to support your highly sensitive child in their education. She's a real fount of knowledge on this subject and has a great deal of wisdom to share with us. So if you believe that your child might be classified as highly sensitive, then keep listening. Before we go over to today's interview though, I just wanted to give you a heads up about something that's coming in September. And that is the launch of my membership site, which is going to be called The Extraordinaries Club. So The Extraordinaries Club is basically how I'm evolving the course that I ran twice during this academic year, so the academic year 2017-2018. Now the course was called The Exam Success Formula, and it was an 8-week course for parents and students, teaching them all the study skills that they needed for students to reach their full academic potential. But I included parents because I saw a great need when I was talking to the parents in my Facebook group for them to be reassured and informed and educated to a certain extent about how to support their children through the exam years. So I ran the course twice and it was really successful. I had 18 families the first time round and 28 families the second time round. And, you know, it's had great feedback and everything. But the one thing that I kind of noticed was that parents really wanted, well, not just parents, parents and students, wanted more support over the longer term than just the 8 weeks of the course. So I thought, well, what can I do to improve what I'm offering to people? And I thought, well, I can have this membership club and it's going to be for parents and students. You'll pay for a family membership. The core content is going to be the content that I taught in the course. So the exam success formula, which is the 8-week, well, it's actually got 9 modules in it, which is the kind of core foundation of how to get the top grades. And for parents, it covers things how to communicate with your child through revision and exams to kind of get the best results. But then I'm going to be offering not just weekly calls through the 8 weeks, I'm going to be offering weekly calls throughout the year to support parents and students. And I'm also going to be adding in things like the revision workshops that I've done all this academic year for free for members. So things like the mocks revision workshops and the half-term revision workshops and all that kind of thing, they're all going to be in there for free for members. That I will be charging people who are not members to access them when I run those, but what I'm also going to be adding in other kind of content and information to help your child really excel throughout the academic year. So I'll do things like teaching my masterclass on exam technique, and I'll do something about productivity, and there might be occasions where I get guest experts in to come and teach stuff. So basically I'm going to be working with you and listening to you and trying to give you what you need, but you're going to have the core content of the exam success formula and you're going to get support throughout the academic year from me in the form of weekly calls during term time. And yeah, it's going to be fantastic. I'm really excited about it. I'm working behind the scenes already, putting all the tech stuff together. And I really hope that you'll be excited to learn more about it towards the end of the summer and at the beginning of September, and that you'd like to come and join me in the Extraordinaries Club. So if it does sound fantastic and you'd like to get on the waiting list and be one of the first people to hear about it, then I've put a link in today's show notes, which you'll find at lifemoreextraordinary.com/55. And yeah, you can join the waiting list and you'll be one of the first people to know about the Extraordinaries Club, and you can get signed up and get started with all the good stuff that's going to be in there as soon as it opens. So yeah, thank you for listening to all about that. I'm just so excited to get it out there and to be able to start working with you on a year-long basis in a more affordable way than I can offer, you know, working with people one-to-one. So yeah, it's really exciting. Okay, let's go over to today's interview. Our guest today is a qualified teen yoga teacher, mentor and EFT therapist, qualified to teach yoga and mindfulness to teens, as well as mentor young people around their emotional well-being. She has her own thriving EFT and yoga business, working locally in South Yorkshire and Rotherham. Since discovering the term highly sensitive person through Dr. E. Aaron's work, she has healed her own struggles with high sensitivity. Now, as a parent of her own highly sensitive child, she has written a book featured in the Daily Mail to help other parents of highly sensitive children. She runs a successful Facebook group for parents and hosts workshops and events for highly sensitive people. She previously worked as a secondary school teacher for 8 years in Derbyshire, but left to pursue her passion for empowering young people to manage their emotional well-being. Now, with over 10 years' experience of working alongside teens, parents and young people, she hopes to spread the word about highly sensitive people and empower those who believe they are highly sensitive to thrive in our modern world, free from the frustration, mystery and struggle that comes with simply not being aware of the term highly sensitive and its unique characteristics and traits. Welcome to the School Success Formula, Catherine Pearson.
Hi Lucy, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's fantastic to have you on the show. So Catherine, firstly, can you explain to us what is a highly sensitive person or child? What does that term actually mean?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so a highly sensitive person is somebody who has a more sensitive nervous system than non-sensitives. And this means that they are more aware of their environment. They pick up on sensory stimulus more than others. They also have a tendency to be empathic, intuitive, and yeah, just generally more sensitive to their world around them.
Okay, so does that cover all the five senses, or like how does it manifest itself, and what kind of behaviour might you see in a person with who's got high sensitivity?
Yeah, sure. So Elaine Aron, who is the doctor who has done a lot of research in this field, explains it as each sensitive person has their own unique fingerprint of sensitivity. Mm-hmm. So for each person who finds themselves being sensitive, and that's around 15 to 20% of the population, they have their own unique sensitivities and their own traits. But it does, you know, it does range through the five senses. I'll give you an example. For me, I'm very sensitive to noise and noises, and I have very very good hearing, let's say. Mm-hmm. A lot of noise overwhelms me very, very easily. I find it very hard to concentrate if there's a lot going on around me, or if there's a lot of noise going on, background noise, for example. I find it very hard to concentrate. Whereas somebody else might present, I'll use my daughter, for example, she gets very visually stimulated. So if there's kind of a lot of TV time, a lot of iPad time or computer time, can overstimulate and overwhelm her. So we have to try and keep that to a minimum.
Okay, so yeah, I get it. So how do you know if your child or if you are highly sensitive?
I often say, you know, has anyone ever described you as being sensitive before? And you know, you either are or you're not. So, you're either described as sensitive or you're not. So that's usually an indication. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so a lot of sensitive people can identify very quickly with the term sensitivity or high sensitivity. Yeah. But Elaine Aron has actually developed a questionnaire for both, you know, both grown-ups, both people and also children. So you can, her website, do you want me to give that now? Or
we can put that in the show notes. So
okay, yeah, sure. So Elaine Aron's website has these two quizzes, and there's a kind of a list of traits, and they're in her books as well. There are a list of things and traits that you would identify with. So, you know, a higher score indicates, you know, a sensitivity. But, you know, really, it's a general, even through her work, she will say, you know, it's not a medical diagnosis and, you know, that kind of stuff. So there is that disclaimer there. But I think as individuals and as parents, you will identify with even the term high sensitivity and some of the traits. So it's more of an identification rather than a diagnosis.
Yeah, because I went and took the quiz before we had the interview because I was doing my research. And I actually think I've taken it once before because I've had a lot of trouble with migraines. And people were just always telling me, I went to see all sorts of kind of medical professionals, osteopaths, acupuncturists, neurologists, you just name them and I've been to see them. Yeah. And eventually, like the acupuncturist said, I think you're highly sensitive. And I came home and found the test and took it, and it turned out that I was. And I took it again this week when I was preparing for the interview. And I got an even higher score this time than I did the first time around. And I kind of really resonate with what you're saying. The things that really get me, I call them smelly shops. I don't know if you know what I mean. Where you go in and they sell like bath bombs and they've got all sorts of things like that. And I can literally step across the threshold and I can feel a migraine coming on, like literally one step inside. It's that immediate and really bright sunlight as well. Just like, I just can't be out. Well, I have to wear dark glasses if I'm going outside. So that's the kind of thing you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, yeah. And yeah, the smells for me exactly the same. There's, I can't. I have a friend and he wears a lot of aftershave, let's say. And you know, and if he greets me with a little bit of a brief hug or you know, a little kiss on the cheek, I can smell his aftershave on me all day. You know, and it drives me insane. I would have to wash, you know, like change my clothes. But yeah, the same with the shops, and I've always had that. But yeah, perfumes, strong smells, just not great at all.
And so from what I was reading as well from your book beforehand, it's all about getting overwhelmed quite easily as well, isn't it?
Definitely. And when we were talking in relation to children becoming overwhelmed, this can then, the overwhelm presents itself in different ways for different people. Like, you know, have you talked about having migraines? Mm-hmm. That is obviously a key, you know, key factor of your overwhelm. Mm. Whereas children can obviously present with overwhelm in different ways, seemingly difficult behaviour, tantrums, strops, outbursts. You know, crying, over shyness, if there's even a word for that.
What,
you know,
kind but being of withdrawal?
Withdrawn, definitely. Not wanting to interact with people, not wanting to go places. And I think these kind of behaviours can be quite alarming for a lot of parents, you know, when you've got younger children. I imagine a lot of your listeners will have those teen exam-aged children. But you know, if we talk about it from a, you know, from a young person's, you know, really young child's point of view, that's how it presents itself. They're often seen as very shy or withdrawn, particularly anxious, even, you know, if you can relate with that. And then as they, you know, develop and get older, that shyness still lingers around, that withdrawn behavior still lingers around. And then I suppose as adults, that's when we start to, our sensitivities start to manifest themselves as physical symptoms. So I mean, you talking with your migraines, I was very much a headachey, headache teenager as well. And a lot of physical, you know, pain, a lot of stress in my body, so shoulder pains and that kind of thing. But school was a very big overwhelming factor, and all the demands of school. So I think, you know, even in the modern world now, we've gotten more, schools become more demanding, the world's become more demanding, it's presenting itself in all different kinds of ways.
Yeah, I think it's really ironic that we both worked in comprehensive schools.
Yes, completely.
Because it's just such an overwhelming environment to be in. And I know when I was teaching, I used to just get so drained by just one day in school. I mean, did you find it similar, have a similar experience of that?
Yeah, completely the same. Even, you know, from the electronic lighting to just, teaching is a demanding profession anyway, but yeah, the constant noise, the ringing of bells, the, you know, the
Chairs scraping and bags.
Just the whole noise. I mean, I was a design and technology teacher, so there was it was very rare that my classroom was ever quiet, or my corridor that I worked on was ever quiet, or you know, so it was a very noisy environment, and very overstimulating, and my entire health suffered, and you know, I was literally in bed by 8:30 every evening.
I can really relate. I used to come home and beg to go to bed, and my husband would be like, no, it's too early to go to bed. I'm like, but I just need to sleep.
That whole being in a dark room kind of feeling, just wanting to lock yourself away and not speak. I had a long commute to my school, so that kind of, even though I had the, you know, the traffic and whatnot going on around me, you know, radio was off, I was silent, you know, and I didn't have anyone speaking to me for 40 minutes, so you know, that kind of helped ease me back into home life. But yeah, it was still very tricky, and I don't know how I managed it for so long.
Definitely. So in your book, when I read it before we spoke, you were talking about how, like, your mum just didn't get your high sensitivity when you were growing up in the 80s. What was that like, you know, as a child struggling with being highly sensitive, but also looking back now as a parent yourself, how did your mum cope with it?
I mean, it was pretty lonely and bewildering, and I think, I don't want to say it wasn't very nice, but it, you know, it wasn't at times very, you know, confusing. I suppose there was less stimulation back in the, you know, as I was growing up. You know, I didn't have a mobile phone until I went to university. You know, there was, you know, TV was just on at specific times.
Yeah.
There was no Sky, you know, so it was, I suppose, you know, we also lived in a rural community. So I was, you know, outside a lot, which helped, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in terms of my mum, I'm an only child as well. So I'm an only child. And I think I was always compared to my cousins and, you know, other children. Mm-hmm. And she always tried to toughen me up, which it never worked, unfortunately, but which happens a lot with sensitives. You can't toughen it up, or, you know, get it out of them. So she always tried to toughen me up. And I think I do say this in the book, but it did put a strain on our relationship. I never felt understood, and it would be quite difficult to understand why I felt the way I felt, and be told, you know, oh, just get on with it. Oh, it's okay. You know, don't be such a baby. Stop crying. You know, I think she was trying to do her best, and toughen me up, because I didn't have any siblings. I think that's what she grew up with two older brothers and a younger sister on a farm. So, you know, she was kind of very used to being picked on by brothers and, you know, whatnot. And I obviously didn't have that experience because I was an only child. So with the best intention, she did always try to toughen me up, but ultimately it never happened. And it did put a strain on our relationship for a while.
Like, if there are parents listening and they're thinking, yeah, I think my child might be highly sensitive, what would your advice be, like, both as a parent of a highly sensitive child and having been a highly sensitive child yourself, like, and remembering we're talking about teenagers, what's your advice about how to parent people like this?
I think the first thing is just to understand and kind of empower yourself with the understanding about highly sensitive people, and secondly, not to see it as a weakness, because you know, we're both testament to that. You know, we're both successes outside of our you know, professional careers. We both have designed these kind of lives for ourselves that fit in with our personalities, but also show off our true strength. So being sensitive isn't a weakness, and it's not something that needs to be ignored or you know, swept under the carpet, and it's something that needs to be celebrated. And I think parents, from research that I have done, parents fear that their child's not going to, you know, thrive or not going to be able to be a success in the world, because the world isn't, you know, the world is quite harsh, and you do have to get on with it, and you do have to man up, and, you know, you do have to kind of, you know, push through. Or at least that's the perception. And so as a parent of a teen, I wouldn't worry too much about, you know, toughening them up, because there are opportunities and there are avenues out there that will suit their sensitive nature. And it's about finding that and being open to it. The next thing would be...
Just before you go on, Catherine, I just want to reinforce that point, because I think, you know, what both you and I have done, you know, we both taught in schools, and, you know, I never dreamed when I left to have my first child that I wouldn't go back. I always thought I would go back to schools, but I knew that I couldn't do it full time once I was a mother. You know, there was just no way that I could cope with that. Others can, but I knew that that wasn't a possibility. But I've created this business and a life that is around my strengths and also around my weaknesses. And you have too. And I was on a call earlier today with some tutors, and there was a lady there who was talking about her chronic illnesses and how she's created a tutoring business around her chronic illnesses. And I think there's a real message of hope for parents and students out there who are struggling, whether it's with chronic illnesses or something like high sensitivity or whatever it is, that the way the tools and the technology that we have nowadays enable people to create flexible work around their strengths and weaknesses in a way that, you know, back in the 1980s, our parents could never have foreseen. So I think there's a huge message of hope there as well, that you don't need to toughen up. You just need to identify the strengths and work with them.
Yeah, I completely, like, you took the words out of my mouth. 100%. Like, I could never, that 9-to-5 mentality is slowly, you know, becoming less of everyone has to do it. And you're completely right, you just got to find those strengths, find what you're passionate about, and then be able to, you know, go and create what suits you. We both work from home, but I'm not a loner. You know, I always say that I work from home, but I'm not a loner. I'm in contact with people every day. I go and teach, but I teach locally to me. I teach what I want to teach. I teach nice small group class sizes, you know, interacting with parents, you know, through social media and through video calls. It just suits me so much better. I'm just a much nicer person. And I'm healthy. So yeah, I 100% echo what you said. I suppose in terms of other things that parents could do, there is so much I could say about that, but empowering and understanding and empathizing are like my key messages. So first of all, understand.
Understand. So what's involved in understanding your highly sensitive child?
Understanding that they are highly sensitive. So finding out what sensitivity is, which is part of what we've talked about today. So if you're on that path, then you've already done that, so to speak. But, you know, reading blogs or articles or even a book. So Elaine Aron has written two books, The Highly Sensitive Person and The Highly Sensitive Child. I don't get paid for recommending her books. I just think they're really great books, and they help, you know, to develop that understanding. Similarly, my ebook is, you know, draws upon Elaine's work, so it's a little bit shorter. So if you're as sparse on time, then maybe my book would be a little bit better.
And it's very practical, your book as well. You know, when I read And it's very, you know, step by step what you need to do to kind of make this life better and more possible, really.
Yeah, I try and kind of cut to the chase as quickly as possible. I mean, I know how a little time we have as parents, working parents. So it was important for me to make something that got the main messages across, but that was concise, you know, and practical and you know, really valuable and brought to life with a lot of real life examples. So first of all, understanding about high sensitivity and how it's not a weakness and it's not an illness. It's not, you know, it's not any of these things that we might perceive it to be. It is a true, you know, it's a personality trait at the end of the day. So somebody can be extrovert and highly sensitive. You know, you can be a success and be sensitive. You know, it's all, you know, just understanding that this whole sensitivity personality trait, it's not new. I'm pretty sure it's already always been around, but it's just becoming more aware of it. Secondly, understanding, empathizing.
Yeah.
So instead of toughening up, you know, instead of sweeping things under the carpet, really taking the time to empathize and open the conversation, show that you're there as a parent to listen and understand, and maybe see things from your child's perspective. You know, to you, it might feel or seem like they're becoming upset or worked up over nothing, but it's about, you know, removing yourself from the situation and putting yourself in their shoes. Mm-hmm. How might they be feeling? What are they going through? And communicating that empathy to them. So I'll often say, I know my daughter's only six, but hopefully you can draw from this example. I might say to my daughter, okay, I can see that you've had a tough day. You're feeling overwhelmed and I can understand why you're behaving the way you're behaving. What can we do to make it better? What do you think you need? What can I help you with? Do you want to talk to me? Do you want to just go and have a bath? Do you want to go and have some quiet time? Do you want to go for a walk with the dogs? You know, what is it we can do to help you feel better? Mm-hmm. That kind of empathy, all I ever wanted as a teenager and a young person growing up was to be understood. Mm-hmm. And not have my stuff swept under the carpet or ignored. So I just wanted to be understood. And I think that goes for a lot of highly sensitive children and people, to be accepted for who they are.
That goes a long way. I think society accepting you for who you are helps you to accept yourself for who you are. Because, yeah, you know, I, with all my migraine trouble and stuff over the last few years, I've really resisted it and wanted to work against it and find a way out of it, and like thinking this isn't good enough, I've got to be better than this, you know. And it's like that demand of society to go harder, faster at everything in life. And then actually I came to this point where I realized this is just me, this is built into who I am, and I have to work with it and accept it, yeah, rather than fighting against it. So I think if parents can accept their children for who they are, then it's much easier for the children to accept it and then for everybody to move forward with a way of working around it and with it rather than, yeah, against it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that completely. Yeah.
Okay, so that's empathy. And then you were talking about empowerment as well.
And that is, again, kind of briefly mentioned it, but just empowering, finding the child's gifts, you know, their natural talents. If we use me and you as an example again, that teaching, that conveying of information, you know, making things simpler. I think we're quite similar in that we understand, mm-hmm, those concepts, mm-hmm, and then are able to kind of transfer them down so other people can understand them as well, you know, make them more adaptable, make them more usable, make them more user-friendly, perhaps, maybe, explaining these big topics in a simpler way. And, you know, it took me a long time to realise what my talents were, mm-hmm, because I'd always tried to fit into everybody else's ideals and everyone's standards. You know, I wasn't the greatest as design and technology teacher, but I knew my skills were evident in that teaching realm. Yeah. Being personable and understanding people and seeing things from a different perspective and being able to communicate well. So all these skills, you know, served me well as a teacher, but served me better doing the role that I do now. And you know, coming up with those creative ideas and, you know, creating a workbook, creating a PDF, creating an ebook, creating whatever it is, creating a resource to help somebody, is one of my passions. Like, I love it. Like, yeah, it sounds so silly, but, you know, I used to love it when Ofsted was coming because as a teacher, because it meant I had to, you know, really plan and articulate everything, you know, so well and create these resources that you just don't have time to do when you don't have to do it.
Yeah.
But now I absolutely love my time. Each week I sit down and create new resources for my teen yoga clients. And I absolutely adore it. I love, you know, creating that stuff. And it, really, what job, I don't know what other job I could do,
yeah,
where I'd get to do that. But, you know, finding the child's, you know, unique passions, gifts and talents. And instead of trying to wedge them into an already made career, trying to see how they could be used in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, rather than just think, right, you want to be a teacher because you want good holidays and you want to, you know, paper breath. Well, actually, I'm probably better served, you know, would serve people better by, you know, maybe formulating this idea or formulating this business or maybe working for this organization or trying to do something similar to this. What you were saying earlier about the technology. Technology is changing so much, and it's a real beautiful tool in enabling us to put our work out there into the world.
Yeah, I think one of the big problems I see at the moment for teenagers, like, this is all amazing stuff for adults, but with teenagers, it just still seems like there's a sausage factory that they have to be churned through to come out in the world in the way that society expects them to be. So they have to take GCSEs, they have to keep studying until they're 18, and a lot of people think A-levels is the best way to do that. Many families think you should go on to university, and this has all come through the media and through culture and all that kind of thing in the last 30 to 40 years or so. But, like, I had a parent in my Facebook group yesterday saying how she just can't get her son motivated to revise. And I was like, well, what does he actually want to do with his life? And she said, well, he wants to travel. And I said, well, you know, languages, geography, that kind of thing, that they should really motivate, be, you know, of interest to him, to help him with that interest to travel. And what about, you know, how's he going to earn the money to travel and all this kind of thing? But then I said to her, ultimately, you know, if he doesn't want to do something that requires all these grades and all these qualifications, stop stressing about it, because crucial to his life. And so I think sometimes we just need to ease up a bit and look at the bigger picture. And for some kids, it is right to, like, churn through this academic system and do the very, very best they possibly can. But for others, actually a different approach is needed.
Yeah. I mean, I even had a student, I don't think he was highly sensitive, but, you know, he was very intelligent, very bright. You know, everyone was on his back constantly about, you know, meeting his target grades, getting, you know, getting the A's, going to university, getting the best, doing the best. And he left school at 16 and started his own business. And, you know, I mean, I don't know what he's doing now, but he started walking dogs at 16. So left school and started walking dogs in his local area, and was making a really healthy profit from it. You know, he'd set this up all by himself, was doing it all legally, because he had that, you know, the acumen, that in the intellect to do that, the academic kind of side to be able to help him do that. He was just thriving. I mean, I'd love to know what he was doing now, but I just saw that in him, that kind of spark in him that was like, no, I'm not going to do what everyone else has done. I'm going to, you know, forge my own path and do it my way rather than doing it the way that it's been done for the last 50 years.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. I think it's really helpful for people to hear of successful examples like that. Anyway, we should probably get back to high sensitivity, shouldn't we?
Yes, so, I'm very sorry. We could chat all day.
I just wanted to pick up on one thing that I noticed in your book about environment and kind of planning activities around a child who is highly sensitive. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Okay, so environment, I needs to be quite clear. clear, and if you think of the environment within school, it's highly stimulating. So lots of people, lots of noise, lots of different energy. So different emotions going on, different, you know, different dynamics going on. And a highly sensitive person will be picking up on those anyway. So that in itself is exhausting. The visual, auditory stimulation, sensory stimulation is exhausting. Then the learning, exhausting. So when they kind of are leaving that environment, when they come home from that environment, you've got to have that little bit of understanding and leeway with them, to go, okay, they've had a really, you know, overstimulating day. Making the home environment calm, clear, quiet even, you know, allowing them that space and time for them to have that rest, that inner rest, mm-hmm. come down from the day to be able to then, you know, rejuvenate, recoup, and gather some more energy to go and do extracurricular activities or start the revision. I'd also, any teen client that I have, the first thing I always try and mention or persuade them to do is their bedroom. So clearing their bedroom. Mm. And I know, even I was a teenager myself, I know how difficult that is. But just having somewhere, some clear, I always remember though, my bedroom could have been a tip, but my workstation where I worked, my revision station was, you know, neat, clear, mm. clean, and it stayed that way. You know, the room could have been a tip behind my back, you know, clothes piled everywhere and mouldy cups, etc. But where I was working was really, really clean and unstimulating, you know, so there wasn't a lot going on. And what I could see was just kind of very low-level stimulation.
Yeah. Have you read that book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up?
No, I haven't. Oh. I don't think I need to do that because I am already the tidiest person ever. No. No, I haven't read it, but no, it sounds like it's just up my street.
Well, it's perfect because it talks about how to actually declutter, and she talks about how in order to be tidy, first you have to remove a lot of the items, the possessions, and that you should only have in your life things that you love, that bring you joy. She says they should spark yeah. joy in you. And I've kind of amended that to the William Morris saying, you know, they should be beautiful or useful or both. I've always been a bit of a hoarder. I don't like throwing things away because you never know when you might need something. But when I did read the book and I started to declutter, I did get that amazing sense of space and ease. And like suddenly the environment was so much more restful to be in. So maybe that's something interesting people can pursue.
Yes. A lot of clutter in family spaces is very common, and it's not something that, you know, we're both me and you are highly sensitive, but obviously I carry that very different approach. Like I think, no, if you're not using it, get rid of it. You know, it doesn't matter if I haven't used something for 6 months, I'm not going to need it again. And that sometimes does come back to bite me in the bum, but it's an ethos that I've always had. You know, if I'm not using it, it goes. The less I have, the happier I am. My husband's wardrobe drives me insane because there's stuff in there that probably is from like 1999 or something. Whereas I will, you know, even having less choice in your wardrobe, that would, if I'm overwhelmed, if I'm highly sensitive, you know, if I'm very sensitive on one particular day, you know, if I'm tired or if I am, you know, I've had a busy day or busy week even, and I go and open my wardrobe and there's 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 or thousands of outfits to choose from, that can be an overwhelming thing. You know, that having that amount of choice can be huge. So I think of any, you know, teens listening to this, really, you know, less is more. You don't have to throw clothes away necessarily, but you know, even just putting your summer clothes away in winter so that you've only got your winter clothes to look at and rotate, you know, rotating them, putting them in a suitcase or something, and, you know, getting them out when, you know, when the seasons change, just simple things like that can really help soothe the environment and not trigger any more sensitivities.
Yeah, definitely. And then what about, as parents, managing family life? Is there anything that parents can do in particular to help their children in that way?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I talk about that quite a lot. And it really, looking at their lifestyle, highly sensitive people need that downtime. So need some time and space just to be and do nothing. So whether that's like having a nap or just literally sitting in a dark room, it might be TV. It's just some form of rest, some form of downtime where there's
nothing's being demanded of you.
Yes, exactly. Where nothing's being demanded of you. And that needs to be built into their daily life without it being seen to be lazy or however else it might be perceived. But looking at their lifestyle, looking at their timetable, do they have that time Do they, there might be extracurricular activities going on. You might have busy weekends, busy family weekends where they're, dragged from pillar to post doing this and doing that. Do they have some time where they have that free time, that free space to just have no demand and be in a non-stimulating, quiet environment? And it might be that you've, I'm just thinking already, parents like, yes, but they just sit on YouTube all the time, or I don't think that being on their phone is downtime, and no, it's not. I completely agree with you. For some people it is, and other people it's a form of procrastination, and other people it could make sensitivities worse. So for me especially, like scrolling, taking in a lot of information can be overwhelming for me. So it exacerbates my sensitivity. And so planning in an activity like a walk, for example, a family walk, they might literally hate it. But something where, it's just a leisure activity that is nice, there's no pressure, outside, in nature, or getting them to do something that you know they love that they've stopped doing. And I know that, again, that's a very hard thing to get any teenager to do. But rekindling a love of art, or, just helping, facilitating, being the instigator in maybe encouraging them to take up a singing lesson, or, go to piano lessons, or just doing something that they were brilliant at as a child, but they maybe gave up as they, peer pressure kicked in and et cetera. So, I talk about extracurricular activities as being overwhelming, but if they're enjoying it and it's enriching their life, and it's, it's not like math tutoring or, you know what I mean? If it's not like another thing on top, it was like, if they're enjoying it and it's something enjoyable for them and it's bringing out their kind of inner brilliance, then make time for that. Maybe be the instigator, maybe be more supportive of that, maybe suggest that to them,
and building time for it as well. I hear it sometimes talked about as like having this like an energy budget, and you can take out from it and you can put back into it. Making sure you've got a balance of those activities, where if you're putting your energy, if you're spending your energy, you're doing something to build it back up again.
Compensation. Completely.
Definitely.
And even I'm just thinking of might just be, encouraging your child just to have a bath. Buying them a bath bomb and a candle, and making sure no one disturbs them for an hour while they have a bath, something, even if it's something as lush as that, because we do, we all do think we don't have the time for these things. We don't have time to look after ourselves. We don't have that space. But we do if we carve it out. We do if we make time for it. And so, being mindful of that.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because on my course, the exam success formula, I get my students to create like a weekly routine of when they're going to study and when they're going to do other things. So they actually plan it out. And there's one girl on the course, and I was talking to her on the group coaching call this week, and she said she made a weekly routine and it was all going very well, but then she stopped following it, and she'd gone back to her old bad habits of not starting her homework till 9 o'clock at night and getting stressed and all this kind of thing. And I said, well, what's the solution? And she said, well, I'll go back to the weekly routine and for a few weeks. And I said, well, why only a few weeks? And she was like, oh, do I follow it forever kind of thing? I was like, well, if it's working, then yes. But it's just, putting that thought in advance into how you spend your time creates opportunities, and you see opportunities about like times for rest, time for socializing, time for your interests, as well as when you're having to study. So I think it's really worth doing. I'll put a link to a blog post about that in the show notes as well. Okay, Catherine, it's been a fantastic conversation, really enlightening and interesting. If people want to know more, where can they go to find your book and all your other bits and pieces that you've got going on?
Okay, so Facebook is Catherine Pearson, so it's K-A-T-H-R-Y-N. Pearson EFT, so that's Facebook. The group for parents is called The Sensitive Subject, A Place for Parents of Sensitive Children. Mm-hmm. The book can be found on my website, so that's www.catherinepearson.co.uk and then / The Sensitive Subject. But it's, again, it's just a tab at the top. If you find the website, you can find the Sensitive Subject tab and find the ebook there. And then Instagram is Catherine, so Kathryn _Pearson_. Fantastic. So we can, yeah, find me on all those avenues.
Brilliant. I will put links to all of those in the show notes so people can easily find those. So it's been a really great to connect with you again and have a fantastic conversation about an important subject. So thank you so much for coming on today, Catherine.
Thank you for having me. It's been lovely to chat to you and it's been really, really nice. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Thank you.
Wasn't that a great conversation with Catherine? I really hope you found it helpful and that's given you some ideas about how to nurture and help your highly sensitive child to thrive through their education. If you're really enjoying the podcast, I'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a review. If you're not sure how, I've actually created a blog post showing you how to leave a review both in iTunes on your computer and through your podcast app, through the Apple Podcast app. So, and there's a handy little video of both leaving the review in the podcast app and leaving the review on iTunes in the blog post. So I've linked to that from today's show notes, which you'll find at lifemoreextraordinary.com/55. And that's where you'll also find all the links to all Catherine's information. So links to her book, her website, and all her social media, and her Facebook group, which is really excellent. I've been a member of it for a while, and she's really active and really supportive of parents of highly sensitive students in there. So all it remains for me to say today is thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and goodbye.